This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 678, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week. This is episode 678. I'm Dave Mattingly. Nope, that's my NPR persona. Sorry. I'm Josh Flanagan, and this is Connor Kilpatrick, my co-host.
Hey, Dave.
I have a whole routine about Dave Mattingly that I do with my 9-year-old son that he thinks is hilarious. And it's all about dead bodies being found, where I just go, I'm Dave Mattingly. Many dead bodies found, because we listen to NPR in the morning on the way to school, and most of it is about dead people.
Is he your target audience for NPR humor?
Currently. Yes.
So now you definitely know he's your kid.
I had no doubt at any point. Like, I've had to go pick him up at daycare, and they're like, can I see your ID? And I was like, you fucking kidding me? Look at him.
Anyway.
Yeah, this is a show. I got off track there. Sorry.
This could be an indication of how excited we were to talk about this week's comics. Continue.
We really are all over the place lately.
Mm-hmm.
It's up to the comics. It's their fault. It's not our fault.
We don't put them out.
This is iFanboy. Every week we talk about our stack of comics. Sometimes it takes more effort than others. One of us picks their favorite book. We call that the pick of the week. We talk about that book. Other books from the week, the patron pick. If we have time, hint, hint, we'll read some listener mail. We will have fun regardless. Your spoiler warning is that in the small amount of books we were able to talk about this week, we will spoil them. So that's on you, kids.
Sorry.
Connor, you had the pick.
I did. And so last week we talked about it was a light week and it wasn't that great of a week. And we had really struggled to even fill the rundown. We normally like to talk about 10 books, 10 or 11 books with the patron pick. And we had trouble this week. Same problem. Similar problem. Not a lot of books. I think I had fewer books this week than last week. I thought on the whole they were better, but still, like, you know, there was like one or two standouts. So it was a very easy week for me to choose the pick of the week, because the pick of the week was glaringly obvious after I read it. Mm-hmm. Because that, and it was a great issue. We'll get to it in 1 second. But the rest of the books, you know, were fine. We're good to fine. Two in a row is hard like that.
Yeah, I agree.
I threw a book in last second, Josh, that we hadn't talked about just to, because I felt like we didn't have enough books to talk about.
Okay, I see that now.
The pick of the week, Invaders number 4, Chip Zdarsky, Carlos Magno, Butch Guice, Alex Guimaraes, and Travis Lanham. And we've been talking about, I think, probably every issue of this series. We are streaky with creators, and right now we're all about Chip Zdarsky's serious Marvel work. And, you know, I've been waiting for this issue the whole time we've been doing this book, which is the secret, shocking origin of the Submariner. Love the Submariner. We talked about that. And I knew once we had that issue, we'd get a lot of Butch Guice art, which I think has been the standout of this book. And so that's what we have here. A really excellent look at Namor's life since the war, which ties in Marvel history. It leads up to Fantastic Four number one. And is it number one or number four? Number four, I think. Why do I keep saying one? It's four. Ties in the X-Men and all the terrible costumes he's had since the first one. And I think it's great. There was an issue that came out with Josh where you were gone and Ryan was on the show. We talked about, and Ryan couldn't decide if they were trying to position Namor as having romantic feelings for the soldier, but I don't think that's the case. I think it's the bonds of war, the brotherhood of war.
I think that would be a very bad move on the part, and it would just be disingenuous. And I think it is much more like what you're talking about, because that's sort of the story of the Invaders is the bonds of war, the band of brothers, the camaraderie, the lifelong, like no matter how evil he gets. And we keep seeing this in all of the evils relative, I guess.
It's all relative.
But, every single time throughout Jason Aaron's run and all this recent stuff where he's always given Cap the benefit of the doubt, for example, that's the underlying current. And I would think it would be the same with any soldier who he served with, regardless of who he fought or how he felt about it or whichever. So, yes.
Which is, I agree. I mean, it's kind of funny when you think about it too hard, like anything in comics, you really can't think about it too hard. But these characters are always in a state of war. So why World War II? Because it was real. That's kind of the conceit you have to make with these characters. But so here we continue the investigation. Bucky's undercover trying to stop Namor's army from getting some equipment that will help them create bombs to attack the surface world, while Cap and Jim Hammond, the Human Torch, who really doesn't need a torch logo on his costume. I feel like it's implied in the red suit and the way he turns into flame. But
I agree with you.
It seems like overkill. So they're investigating Namor's past, trying to figure out why he's always showing up with this family. And so finally the daughter of his, I was going to say teammate, but their soldier buddy from the Invaders tells the story of Namor coming in and out of their life for the last however many, decades. And the flashback art's terrific. It's really terrific. Butch Guice, I don't know how to say his name.
It's Guice.
Butch Guice is a guy who's been around forever. Mm-hmm. I have to imagine he's in his, at best, late 50s, early 60s. He's been around almost my entire comic reading life.
He wasn't always Butch, right? He had another...
Yeah, Butch is his nickname.
I know, but he was professionally known by a Jackson Guice.
Yes, yes.
Born in 1961. So...
In his 50s.
That would make him... Make him 59.
Right. So, right, I got it right in the bullseye.
Nailed it. Can't say his name, but...
No. Nailed his age.
I can estimate his age based on almost nothing.
Well, based on his comic career. He's been around for decades, and he still really has it. I mean, he's a really terrific artist.
Which is good, because I'm not entirely convinced that Carlos Magno does.
Carlos Magno comes and goes. There's some things he does I really think are great, and some things I don't love. I mean, if Butch Guice did this whole book, it would be terrific. But I also think the way that it breaks up the flashbacks of the present day really works. So
that I don't remember where. I mean, was it did that originate with Cap with Ed Brubaker's Captain? Not originate, but it became contemporarily popularized.
Well, it's a thing, right? That we talked about it last week with some book that had flashbacks. The Red Sonja, the other pick of the week, had Bob Q doing the flashbacks. Yeah. And Captain America with Steve Epting doing the present day and Michael Lark doing the World War II flashbacks. It really worked to create a different mood.
And was it and Brubaker before that? Or no, was it concurrently? Brubaker and Fraction, their Iron Fist, I think the flashbacks were someone else too.
I mean,
these
things have definitely happened in the past, but they're very common now. It's a good way to give your main artists some breathing room, especially if they're an artist who can't really hit that schedule, like in Iron Fist's case, David Aja was the main artist, so it's a good way to give him some pages break.
Oh yeah, they brought in lots of different artists. I remember because Russ Heath did one of the things, and
it's a gimmick that can really work for the story.
Yes,
and it's also not just a gimmick, but it's necessary in some cases. It's a tool that you need to get the comic done on time.
Yeah.
So we know, we learned that, you know, Namor's been visiting his war buddies since he, you know, they've been back from the war, and he had a kid, so he came by to visit the kid, and he sort of helped raise the kid, an official uncle, took her to the hospital when she was having her baby, and flew her to the hospital, which is a great way to get there. And then, you know, came back throughout, helped raise her son, threw the football with him. Can't really picture Namor throwing the football, but he had amnesia at the time, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
That's okay.
What I think is interesting is that with a lot of characters, I think that you and I we've certainly frequently expressed displeasure with going back and filling in gaps of things. Mm-hmm. However, for whatever reason, it seems to work with Namor because we don't really know a lot about him. He's a lot of bluster. There's an idea like if there is a hidden life to this guy, and you know he's complex enough that it sort of works.
It also isn't a retconning,
right?
So much.
Yeah, no, exactly.
It's more like here is this side family he had, and then it's no secret he's a mutant. So Charles Xavier shows up and he wants Namor to help him find other mutants. It's very early in Charles Xavier's tenure. There's no X-Men yet at this point, even. And that's not out of the realm because, again, we know he's a mutant. He's Marvel's first mutant. You know, he was created way back in the 30s. So it makes sense that from a comic history perspective, he's the first mutant that Xavier goes to. So that makes sense. That works. And then, you know, we know he has to have amnesia because that's how he shows up in Fantastic Four. So, you know, it all sort of... It's one of those times where they thread everything together in a way that isn't annoying because it's not really any major revelations. It's more like just character building. Like here, he was doing this stuff. Mostly he was hanging out with his family because it was his best friend from the war. It really worked emotionally.
Further question for you. Mm-hmm. He flies pregnant lady to the hospital. Now, already, we have to swallow a lot of disbelief when we're going with the ankle wings.
Right.
You'll note in that shot, he has pants on and boots. So are the ankle wings merely ornament?
Well, that's a good question.
I mean, physics-wise, they didn't have a hope. But now they're suggesting perhaps in a better explanation that they have nothing to do with anything. They're simply flare.
Which is funny because other times you can see them sticking out of his pants.
Oh, yeah.
At the bottom.
Look at that. I see that.
So maybe they just under the pants really working hard. Maybe he's not wearing socks.
You know what Namor can do?
Anything.
Namor can sit in a chair, put his pelvis forward, spread his legs out, and only be wearing little man panties.
Yeah.
And it's okay.
As arrogant as you want.
Yep. Yeah. You don't want to be in the subway next to him. I know that much. No. Not only would he do that, but he would put his bag on the seat, and if you gave him a glare about it, he'd hit you.
So I was really enjoying the issue, and then I thought, you know, this is probably the pick. So at that point, it was the best thing I read, and it continued to be. But then I got to the end and the cliffhanger in the present day in which it's revealed that the kid, the son that he helped raise, the grandson of his war buddy, is an officer. He's a commander on a ship in the Navy, and he is working with Namor. So he's a traitor. He's a spy. He's a double agent. So that was a good twist. That means when it finally comes to a head, it's going to get real emotional. So I thought this issue, top to bottom, was good. It was mostly Butch Guisart. It was a little, you know, Carlos Magnus stuff was okay. It's been good.
I dig his cover a lot on this one. I think I said that when we were talking about the last issue. I was like, oh, it's good.
I mean, Winter Soldier looks like he has kind of a page boy cut on page 22, but, you know, not much you can do about that.
You know, it's an Invaders comic. What do you want from that?
Right. I mean, this was really, really good. And this is the kind of stuff you want. I mean, these guys aren't really going to team up and fight evil together because their relationship's too complicated, and one of them is a supervillain, basically. So these stories are all about the complex history of the characters and how that plays out today. And it really works. I mean, these books never last that long because there's only old men like you and me who really like these stories.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of us.
After James Robinson went and got another job, I think Marvel was just like, I guess that's it for these characters. And then Chip Zdarsky was like, I'd like to try it. And they were like, oh, okay. Give it a shot again, I guess.
It's a great Butch Guys cover, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some discussion about this on our Facebook page. Not the Patreon page, but the Facebook page. When you have all of the Namor costumes together on the cover, It really goes to show how bad the new one is. People are sick of that, but this one's bad.
The cover for the next issue really makes it look bad after you've been looking at him in his man panties.
I mean, the other ones are preferable, too. They're not great. I don't love the X-Men one, the second one on the left. Uh-huh. But I'm okay with the Wings one, the one he wore a while ago.
Sure.
It just really goes to show how kind of like angry 90s the current costume is.
Who designed that? Was that designed over at... Oh, it was Zed McGuinness.
Was it?
Theoretically. I mean, that's where he first showed up with it.
Hmm.
Recently.
Look, the 90s are back. We all know this. Fashion-wise, clothing... not clothing, that's also fashion. Now, TV, Friends is the most popular thing on Netflix. Like, we get it. It doesn't mean you need to bring it back to the comics. It was a dark time. For the most part.
Yeah, but they said we made a lot of money then. Maybe if we just do it a little differently this time, it'll come out better.
Well, we're 8 years into this 90s resurgence in the comics. It's not working aesthetically.
No, it isn't. It's a bloodbath over at DC.
Sales have never been worse. So let's rethink this. Pull up. I mean, that was the pick. It was the easy pick. There were other good books this week, like I said. But, like, I read Invaders fairly early on, and it was one of those books where every time I finished one, I was like, not as good as Invaders.
I feel like it's an easy pick for you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it would have been mine. It might have been. But I don't know that it's completely obvious to, like, people who are not old men like us.
It's also my pick, so it gets to be my easy pick.
I know, and I'm fine with that. I think I'm just – I think most of the people listening now understand. But there's been a lot of time where they didn't. Not they. Not the collective they.
So I'm very curious to know what you thought of Batman 68. Tom King, Amanda Connor, John Timms, Michael Janin was in there, Dan Panosian.
Yeah. I went back and forth on this.
I did too.
Having forgotten that we were still in the dream state, which mm-hmm. we've now been in for 3 years, like I liked the art.
Mm-hmm.
Of Amanda Connor specifically. I was like, oh, look at that. Amanda Connor did a good chunk of this. But it seemed a little like fan fiction for a while.
It's bizarre because we basically did this story, exactly this story already.
Yeah, but this was even more out there.
Well, because it is the hallucinations. It's a little more extreme.
Yeah, no, once I remembered that, then I was like, okay, that kind of excuses it. But, like, you know, there's bits of it that were just weird. Like, it was a real stretch. You know, that was the stripper Superman bots, the ecstasy hot tub, the
right.
like the complete awkwardness of Clark and Bruce, I kind of right. didn't buy. But, you know, like basically there's that page, it's page 20, you know, where Clark finally starts to talk to him, which would have happened earlier in real, you know, but it's not real, so it's fine.
Right.
And he's like, and that's why she left you on the rooftop. And I went, oh, okay, good. And then sort of the last page reveal is fine. I think it was kind of fun. I think it took up too much time to get there. I don't know that it was a whole issue's worth of stuff.
Right. I mean, this has to be the last issue because this is the first time we've seen Batman hooked up to the dream machine or whatever he's in. So this has got to be it.
Yeah.
So randomly saw on Twitter that Mitch Gerrits revealed how this issue came to be. I don't know if you saw that or not.
No.
But basically they were at a convention and Amanda Connor walked past and Tom King yelled out to her, hey, do you want to do Batman? She said, I would have loved to have done the Bachelorette issue. And he said, okay. It sounds mm-hmm. like this issue was written specifically so that Amanda Connor would draw it. I mean, it's a retread of those terrific issues from previously in which
yeah.
the two couples hang out before the wedding. And it's fine. They're really fun, but like, okay, we did it.
Right. And also I thought, the other real genuine thought I had during this was like, I love Amanda Connor's art, and I think she's great, but I was like, what if we don't use her for this kind of thing? What if we just let her draw comics?
But this was what she wanted to do.
And I understand that, and I assume that at this point she actually has enough power to make those kind of choices,
mm-hmm.
but it's also kind of like, you know, it's like, hey, Adam Hughes, why don't you draw comics instead of just commissions? You know, like that, which mm-hmm. he's done a little bit recently. It's just like I feel like it'd be cool to see her just do some good comics, like she did with Before Watchmen, you know, like
right.
just straight up, like let her really draw some stuff as opposed to the... You know, the cute, funny stuff, which I guess if that's what she wants to do, that's fine. But she's, you know, there's much more on offer there, I think.
It got better at the end, like you said, when they sort of revealed the dark side of it.
Yes.
They changed the artist to John Timms, and the art was rougher and sketchier when the mood changed from the party atmosphere. And that part worked. So, again, the artist change here really served the story.
It just was weird. Like, again, Tom King writes funny scenes, and sure. I enjoy them. But like, I was halfway through this, and I was like, didn't. I mean, I know we're in a dream, but we just did this. And the hard thing about just doing it was those were like amongst the most acclaimed issues of his run so far.
Sure. Yeah.
Even with the terrific amount of Connor art, you come back less than, because it's not going to live up to those three issues or whatever it was that they did.
Yeah, you're right. And I think it's clear, like, with this, however many months we've been, you know, actually, it's been, what, maybe six issues? It's only 3 months, but it's just a lot of content. We've been in this dream sequence,
yeah,
which for me is challenging. And there's been good stuff in there. Like, oh, okay, I can totally get behind, you know, the craft that was in those things, but also I want to move the plot forward, and I don't feel like I'm moving the plot forward. We're just still exploring what already happened. And psychologically, like, I don't think there's anybody reading this now who does not understand what happened and does not understand those characters' feelings on things. Mm-hmm. Like, we get it. We get it. We knew when whoever, you know, whenever a character dies, they spend, you know, however long mourning with Batman. It happens all too often, you know, and after what you know, I don't like to do that. This is the same thing. It's why did the relationship die? It's, you know, we got it. We've been in here a long time now. Maybe not. I don't even know calendar wise how long, but
it's got to have been 3 months. Six issues.
The wedding issue?
Six issues every other week for six issues. Mm-hmm. Is that 3 months?
Well, Catwoman just – what was Catwoman?
Number 10.
Number 10?
Maybe.
So that's monthly. That's not every 2 weeks. So
is it monthly?
It's not every 2 weeks.
I don't know. It may not have been 10.
That means that the wedding issue was number 5 10. To Weird. 10 months ago.
Hmm.
So that's how long we've been – we're still dealing with this like emotional fallout, which in real life makes sense. In superhero terms, get on with it.
Yeah, I mean, when Jason died, they didn't even spend a year until they got Tim in there.
Yeah.
So you got to move quick. Got to get over things.
That was a different time, though.
Yeah.
It was the 80s. It was cocaine. Didn't matter.
So did you check out Fair Lady number 1 from Image Comics?
I did.
Brian Schirmerer, Claudia Balboni. Great name. Much like the Yankees 80s slugger Steve Balboni, who looked like my dad. First baseball player looked like my dad. It was upsetting. Anyway, sorry, the name brings me back. Is that you?
So this is initially I just grabbed it because it was a number one, and then I was like, oh, I'll see if I like it. And I got a couple pages into it, and I thought, oh, this is one of those like other world that has cat people and a whole system that we have to understand. And I've read so many of these. However, I thought it was really done well. It was interesting, basically. Like
the pitch got me. The pitch is basically PI in a fantasy world, and each issue was going to be a case, a full case. And it's like, oh, that's interesting. Yeah. That's interesting. So,
and I actually didn't get that. I didn't read the pitch. I didn't get that until the end. And then at the end, I sort of realized what it was, and I was like, oh, cool. I like that. You know,
I think I got the. I mean, the pitch is in the first page, in that little text explainer. So, like, I downloaded the issue because it looked interesting, and then I read the first page. I'm like, okay, so I'll read it. And then I didn't think the execution was that great. The art is not there yet. I mean, it's
bad.
It's close. It's not bad, but it's a little flat and uninteresting. Mm. There's one page where the bad guy is sitting in a chair with his leg crossed, and his leg is totally not attached to his hip. Page 17. Stuff like that. I mean, it's going to get there. It's a new artist. And there's a part where the main character just punches somebody and it just doesn't look like it. I think most of all, though, it just felt like a very unsatisfying story. You know, like, if you're going to have a mystery, in this issue, she's looking for a missing woman who stole money from a crime boss, like a basic Midnight Run kind of thing. She's an accountant who stole money, and she finds the girl eventually, but you don't find anything else out. Like, why? Or what the point was.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's, you know, it's a mystery. You ask a bunch of questions, and you have to answer them at the end. And it's just kind of like, finding her isn't necessarily enough. If you're just going to do these one-offs.
I agree with all of those things that you just said. The other side of it, though, is that I have read a lot of these kind of books from Image, from Dark Horse, from whatever, where, you know, it's this kind of world. There's this, and they're completely unmemorable. They didn't stick with me. I've stopped reading some of them halfway through. Mm-hmm. But for whatever reason, I did finish this. And I think there was something to it that I found interesting. There was either the voice, or I really like that that full page thing of sort of their community on the, you know.
Well, I actually like the world. Thing. Yeah, that their town was built in the carcass of a fallen giant robot. It's cool,
like a celestial kind of thing. Yeah.
The obligatory essay at the back from the writer. You know, the pitch was basically Magnum PI in the post War for the Rings world. Like, yep. What happens after the
Lady
giant...
Lady Magnum P.I.
Yeah, what happens after the giant battle? Mm-hmm. What's the world like? And there's a P.I. in it, and she's a former soldier. And the world's good. I like the world. I just was a little bummed out. But I'm going to try the second one because I thought that there's a lot of good bones.
Right. This is the point. So, yeah. Like, you know, beginner first issue, pilot, but something.
Right.
You know, which is saying something in this world with us as readers.
Yes.
So it's not a bad review. It's you know, there's something there.
I mean, she's got a giant cat sidekick, sure.
I mean, like, that's the thing. Like, I've seen that in 50 books, right? You know, like,
half her head shaved off.
And he's got an attitude, and someone says the wrong thing, so he kicks his butt. Like, yeah, I've got it. I've seen it. He's a Wookiee. I get it.
But I liked it. I mean, it was like a solid 3-star book for me.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
You know, there's maybe it'll get better.
Maybe.
But if you like that kind of thing.
I liked the coloring. Thought the coloring by Marissa Louise was pretty good. It's a nice looking book. Now, we've got one issue of Avengers No Road Home number 9. By the way, small aside, there is a legacy number attached to this, which I refuse to acknowledge.
It's the most... I know we've mentioned it a bunch of times in the show, but it's the most perplexing thing I've ever seen out of comics, and that is saying a lot.
From now on, I'm just going to subtract 10
right.
from every Avengers.
Right, so when Avengers 1000 comes out, it's actually Avengers 990.
Mm-hmm.
You can't 100%. Just slap random numbers in other books. You can't do it.
Okay, let's put that aside.
Especially when there's another Avengers book coming out simultaneously. You can't do that.
We have to. Do they do that? Like, did they go back and like retroactively add like Peter Parker Spider-Man and Web of Spider-Man?
I'm sure.
Spectacular Spider-Man.
It doesn't work that way, guys. It doesn't work that way.
Okay. Let's talk about the book, though.
Okay.
This is the 9th issue, the penultimate issue of this miniseries. Is it still holding up for you? Are you enjoying it?
It's all right. I mean, I look back at the first issue, which was the Pick of the Week, and that was sort of the issue that happened before the plot kicked off. Mm-hmm. And the plot has been, like, kind of, you know, fine. So the part I liked the best was the characters interacting before the plot started, which happened at the end of that issue. You know,
and then they all kind of separated, so, like...
Right.
Yeah.
This character, Nyx, you know, an old god, has... It's basically, you know, hunt for the broadcast energy transmitter. All the pieces are all over the universe, and they're all in the teams trying to find the shards before she does, and they're... to various degrees of success, and it sort of seems like, because it's tied into Hercules' past and all the old Greek gods, that this is all about his... He says it. He even says it here. He wants to be a better hero. He doesn't just want to be the guy you have a beer with. He wants to live up to his name, even though he's got a man bun, so that's the first step, is to undo that.
What would Zeus say?
You know, there's good things that happen. I don't understand the point of Conan being here other than to give the motivational speech, which is terrific, but which, you know, he really goes with suddenly being thousands of years in the future with water off the back. No problem.
You know what? I buy that out of Conan, quite honestly.
Okay.
Like, he's not going to be like, oh my God, what are those things on your shoes? Those are laces. Wow. I agree with the things that you've said. The villain, whatever.
Yeah, the villain's completely
dream.
Unmemorable, yeah.
I think because the writers involved with this are fairly experienced, I think there's a lot of good character stuff that's happening in here.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree.
Like, I'm liking, you know, the Vision, and I'm liking Rocket, and I'm liking Hercules, and, you know, I'm hoping to get some sort of resolution with the Hawkeye Hulk thing, because that was sort of the big promise.
Yeah, I mean, they did have a conversation about it. It was fairly early on. It was like issue 3 or something. They had in the hospital. So I don't know. That may have been resolved to their liking already. I mean, the best part of this issue was that weird green creature. I don't remember
what
it was.
Yeah, the planet. It was like the spirit of the planet. I thought that was interesting.
Going through all the characters and asking what they really want deep in their heart. And that was really good. Yeah. Hawkeye just wanted one perfect shot.
I think it was the best of the more recent issues. Yes. Because I was losing steam. And so I thought, okay, that's, you know, we're coming. And also, like, it's just short of overstaying its welcome. You know what I mean?
I think the last one they did of these, the last weekly Avengers thing they did of this group was longer than 10. I think it might have been like something crazy, like 24. I could be wrong.
You read that. I did read that.
So 10 feels good.
Yeah, I think so.
I wish the villain was stronger.
Yeah, yeah. Also, it's because it's NYX.
Right.
I always pronounce it NYX because that was like it was a Brian Wood series, wasn't it?
It was a Brian Wood series.
And so I keep reading it as
Hip NYX. Young X-Men in New York or something like that. Yeah. Josh is feisty today.
Well, you know, how much hip young it never works. It's always dumb. That's not true. Runaways worked. If you want more of this, and why wouldn't you?
Listen, it's not our fault. We don't make the books. The books are great, it's all a love fest. People complain that it's a love fest. So sometimes you're going to get the vinegar.
We came in with Dave Mattingly humor. I mean, what else do you want? I'm David Green in Los Angeles. I can do that all day. If you like this, you're thinking, you know what? I need more of this and I need to make sure it doesn't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. Well, then patreon.com/ifanboys, the place that you need to go. That is where you can support the show directly. That's, you know, you toss a little something our way. Say, so I appreciate the thing you're doing. I want it to keep going. I want to make that easier for you guys to continue this job. And that's what you can do. There's different tiers that you can be part of it. You've already helped bring back these special edition shows that we're doing. And there's more. The next stretch goal is another special edition monthly comic non-comics media podcast that you would hear every month. It would exist where it had not existed before. Plus we will be properly motivated to put all the rest of the video shows and minis up on our YouTube channel and get them all back on the website so that the full extent of us sitting on a couch in shorts can be experienced by you.
You know, that was a mistake. We needed a producer.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
We should have known better. It was very hot sometimes, sure, though, sure. In our defense. You can go to ifanboy.threadless.com and you can find any of our current 7 designs over there. There's still some good ones. Every time I look over the list, I'm like, oh, that's good. I need one of those.
I'm very happy I have a GDOT shirt. I wear it with pride.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. I don't see how you couldn't. You can go to ifanboy.com/support where you can find a place to do direct donations via PayPal if none of that stuff works for you, but you still want to help out. Or you can go over to ifanboy.com/Amazon where you will find a general link to Amazon for your purchasings. And you will also find links to buy the books that we talk about on Booksplodes, including the most recent one, the JLA something, Essentials Editions, the Grant Morrison, Howard Porter. It was good.
Yep.
And then we link the Pick of the Week books also. As well. So thank you to everybody who does that. If you've been thinking about it, let us know what we can do to make it more worth it for you. Maybe you're like, listen, I'm getting it for free already, pal, and I don't want to help out. You know, that's fine. Maybe right. You're some kind of socialist. I don't know.
Why buy the cow when you get the milk for free is what they always used to say in the old world.
I can't argue with that. But in this economy, in this kind of entertainment world that we live in now, things work a little differently than they used to, and they depend largely on your altruism.
Milk prices go up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if that works in the context of the analogy.
Well, if nobody's buying milk and there's just it's a free milk market, then eventually you're going to get a milk shortage.
I'm curious because you haven't read Wonder Twins since the first issue because you missed issue 2 for some reason.
I have to.
You read it after the show. You hadn't read it, but when we
I know I just missed that one and then I caught up, so I read 3.
Right. So I'm good. Curious what you think because we haven't talked about 2 or 3 yet. This is 3.
What is the malingerer's power?
I don't remember. I don't remember.
The whole time I was trying to figure it out. It's fun. I like it. It reminds me very much of Garth and his Hitman era takes on superheroes.
This has got to be like a 6-issue miniseries, right?
I don't see how it.
I mean, they haven't said it, but it's got to be. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like it's got all the things where it's funny, it's irreverent, and he does his funny. Unlike Garth Ennis, this is like. PG rated humor for the most part, which
and
I think
there's love, whereas Garth Ennis is clearly hate.
No, actually, I was gonna say like Garth Ennis' stuff underneath all that. A lot of times there is heart, and I thought that.
Well,
was
in general, but he doesn't like superheroes, so there's always. I mean,
it's true.
The piss take on superheroes is actually a piss take, whereas this is just goofy.
Yeah, but there's still been bits where, like, you know, Tommy Monahan up on a roof having a conversation with Superman, like, yeah, I get it.
Right.
Like, that's happened, and that Superman is in here, too. And then there's real moral dilemma. You know, there's the father who has to work for Lex Luthor, you know, and he's a super genius, and, you know, that's actual drama.
Right.
The characters of the Wonder Twins are sort of, you know, they're just there to be silly. Certainly Zan. Is that him?
Zan and Jaina, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and she's sort of got a real story going on. It's fun. Like, it's
I would not have pegged Lex for such a big Little House on the Prairie fan.
Yeah, and also, is it he also referenced the Waltons, maybe?
No, it was Little House on the Prairie.
Right, I know, but he said one reference that was wrong.
And oh, no, that was a reference to Gunsmoke?
No. Oh, yeah, Hoss.
Was it Gunsmoke?
Maybe, but doesn't matter. It's another.
Either way, Michael Landon was on both shows. He referenced just different Michael Landon shows.
I'm not surprised that Mark Russell understands those shows.
The Ponderosa. What show was that? Is that Gunsmoke?
Know. You're more versed in these.
I'm losing it in my old age. I would have been able to tell you all about it once in my life. It's fun, and the Stephen Byrne art, who does the full art job, is great.
Yeah, no, it really is. It's got one of my favorite things to do in comics is when Philo Math. Is frustrated and he puts his head in his hands. And so when you see him like sitting at the table, like, oh, I'm surrounded by idiots. I always like that move. I've written that move into like every comic I've ever written because I think it's funny. Like the rubbing of the temples.
Right.
That always makes me laugh. Really though, what does the malingerer do? He's in a white sort of jumpsuit that has a red cross on it. And then he also has one of those neck braces. And I don't
think I realized that that amphetamine was just an evil Mary Poppins.
Uh-huh.
Until she got to do her song this week. I was like, oh.
I guess that makes sense. And then also, let's not discount the story of Gleek's origin.
Listen, it's a fun book. It's a really fun book.
It is a fun book.
I wasn't going to talk about Detective Comics, but you put it on the list.
Did I put it on the list?
Yeah, you did, yeah.
All right. I read it. Mm-hmm. Almost just because I had read 1000, I was like, oh, right, this is the next story. But if you remember, didn't really like 1000 and not super into this creative team, but I read it anyway. And has this been done before, this Knight of Gotham? Is this...
This particular thing, I don't believe so, but the idea, it's just another secret society in Gotham.
Isn't awesome. That what John Paul Valley was?
It was an Order of Saint Dumas, and I don't know if that was a different sort of kind of thing.
The bit, so basically the beginning, the bats are dead everywhere.
Yeah, that was
and
cool.
Gordon finds them all, and then, you know, and Batman is, he's dissected 56 bats, and I thought, that's a cool idea. I don't think I've ever seen that in this. And it's a great symbolism. It's, you know, and then going, then taking that one further to go see Man-Bat, and then his, I don't know, is that his assistant, his daughter,
wife.
Who is also,
wife.
His wife, okay. Mm-hmm. So she's also got it too. Like, I think that Pete Tomasi might be sort of like the Dan Slott of DC.
He's a very good Batman writer, historically. Mm-hmm. Like, he's one of those guys, you slot him in, he can do however... See, there you go.
Yeah, by the way, that was not a knock on Dan Slott or Tomasi.
No, I didn't mean to make the pun by slot him in.
I got you.
He has written very, very good Batman stories, and he's written very sort of average Batman stories. And he's,
he's
like, you know, sort of your utility guy. You need a Batman writer for 8 months, he'll do it. And he'll do a good job. I don't know if I need another secret society. It seems like to be all
you
Batman
don't.
Fights
Definitely
these days.
Don't.
He only seems to fight secret societies. I did like the Brad Walker choice as artist.
I was going to make that.
He's kind of weird.
Yeah, I think I know him originally from the Guardians of the Galaxy comics a while back.
Hmm.
And I'll see him pop up now and then. And it's funny because if you look, this book's super light. I guess they light a sun up. Over Gotham, so that makes sense. But you're still not used to seeing Batman like that.
Right.
And it's kind of just fun, cartoony art. Actually, really, some stuff I really like.
The faces are exaggerated a little bit. He has a very distinct style. And when I saw him, I was like, oh, that's interesting, because he is kind of off, you know, the beaten path, but not fully indie. He's clearly a superhero artist, but he's on the spectrum, you know, a little bit to the left.
It's funny, like on other book, I don't think it would even stand out, but on a Batman book, it kind of did. I was like, oh, they don't go this direction very often.
So I'm not super psyched about another secret society, but the opening was interesting about killing all the bats and in the Gotham. And in the that was interesting. So we'll see.
Yeah, I will probably keep reading it.
But this is like the third one I can think of off the top of my head that's happened in the last like 5 years.
Oh, sure.
Which is a lot, considering each arc takes a half a year. Or
are you even counting the magician one from Detective 1000?
No, I'm counting like the one detective that was run by Batwoman's father, that one that they thought killed Tim Drake, and obviously the Court of Owls, and you know, there's just like, it just seems like he's constantly being attacked by these shadowy military type groups.
There sure are.
Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man number 4, Tom Taylor, Yildre Cynar.
Yildre. I think you got an extra eye in there.
I could have an extra eye. Aunt May has cancer.
Really?
Yeah. I don't have an extra eye. That's how many eyes he has.
Okay. Why does Aunt May have cancer?
They got to do something.
They just did that.
I know. That was one of the bizarre things. I feel like she was just sick.
Not even her. I just mean like Jane Foster. We just went through the whole thing and she was in remission. So as far as like major Marvel events.
I'm fairly certain in the last, it's hard to say in the last because we've been doing this for so long, but at some point, I don't know if it was when Dan Slott was doing it or not, but at some point Aunt May was sick. But all things happen again. But I want to point out, because it actually is a good Spider-Man book, and in a week when Amazing Spider-Man came out and gets all the attention, rightly so, because it's terrific. This book's also really fun. It's a different, lighter, it's not as quite as heavy as the Amazing Spider-Man is. This is more of a fun adventure book. It's not
really, because you just told me that Aunt May had cancer.
Well, the first three issues were like that, and then the beginning of this issue is like that. He's helping this kid who stole a car but didn't really steal a car. So there's the wacky adventure, and it kicks it off, and then you get the hammer dropped on you.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that's been their point the whole time or not, or what they're doing, but it's been a really kind of goofy but fun and interesting Spider-Man book up to this point.
Well, I hope she feels better.
I do too. Who else is going to make the wheat cakes?
I also hope that it just sort of keeps itself confined over to this book and not Amazing, because I don't need that shit.
There's got to be things to do besides make her sick.
Yes, but it's the one thing that Peter can't protect her from. Forever, all he's done is protect her from threats from supervillains and everything. But now it's the one thing he can't do anything about, and he's got responsibility, but does he have the power?
Anyway, I see that there's a Star Wars corner return this week.
Oh, man. Good team on Star Wars Age of Rebellion, Grand Moff Tarkin number 1. Greg Pak on story and Mark Laming on art. You might remember Mark Laming as a guy. I think I remember him first from the Planet of the Apes stuff that Gabe Hardman and Karina Becko did. Mm-hmm. And he was the artist to follow up Gabe on that. And he shows up now and again on other stuff. Really, I think, pretty strong artist, sort of in the vein of Hardman. I think it's a one-shot about Grand Moff Tarkin, and the storyline is sort of the just before as they're blowing up Alderaan, and actually that one of the pages in here is the interrogation, quote unquote, of Leia, where you're far too trusting,
right.
That, and they blow it up, and the idea behind it is that it takes 160. This is totally like a deep dive into Star Wars stuff that explains things you might not need to, but it doesn't really affect anything. The idea being, when they fire the laser on a planet to blow it up, it's a very complicated procedure, and it takes like 168 gunners, the guys with the helmets,
right, mm-hmm.
to do it. And they run a test at some point, and it doesn't go, and that's because one of the gunners hesitated, or one or more of them. And so Tarkin is trying to root out that hesitation from his ranks, and he's ruthless and everything. So basically at the end of it, he ends up sending a bunch of dudes out the airlock. But in the whole time, that's interspersed with sort of flashbacks of his hard scrabble upbringing, where his dad basically literally threw him to the wolves. Although they're not wolves, but basically, like, whatever space creatures are on, they're like, fend for yourself, And so that's how he got to be tough as nails, which was fine. It was fun. It's like the tales of books.
I believe there's a Grand Moff Tarkin novel, so I wonder how that ties in.
See, I'm willing to read a comic book issue about it and have fun with that, but I don't know that I could commit to a novel, because that could go wrong in all sorts of ways. And he is, by the way, Grand Moff Tarkin, one of my favorite characters from the first Star Wars movie.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Hands down, bar none. He's my favorite moment in it. I mean, not the whole trilogy. My favorite moment in that first movie is, Vader's like, what have we seen, the last day of the Empire, and soon, or the Rebellion, and soon we'll see the last days of the Republic. And Tarkin just gives him a side eye. Whatever, dude. It's great. It's truly wonderful. And then there's one more scene where he takes all the gunners And he picks out the, you know, the lead gunner or whatever. And he's like, do you have any bruises on you, any scars, anything? He's like, well, I have one scar on my knee from playing some grav ball. And he's like, that's it. Tarkin rips off his shirt. He's jacked. Says, give this guy a vibro blade. And then he cuts him with his knife. And they have like a fight. And he's like, if you survive, you can keep your position. It was very silly. And I liked that. It was fun.
That sounds terrible.
It is terrible, but in the good way.
All right. Well, those are the books we figured out we could talk about. If you go to patreon.com/ifanboy, you can become a patron, and any patron at any level can vote to add a book to the rundown. This week, the overwhelming favorite was The War of the Realms, Journey into Mystery No. 1, written by the McElroys, with art by Andre Lima Arroyo, Chris O'Halloran on colors, Clayton Cowles, the ever stalwart Clayton Cowles on letters. And this is our first tie-in book to The War of the Realms. As we follow, let's see, Miles Morales, the stupid dog, Thory, which everyone seems to love but I hate, Kate Bishop, Wonder Man, Balder, and some other people in a Winnebago as they're trying to keep a baby safe. What was that they were doing?
At some point, Freya had a baby.
Oh, that's right. Thor and Loki and Balder's sister.
I don't remember where that came from, or like I don't think it was in Thor because I don't remember it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's completely unnecessary, but I can put that aside.
Oh, Deathlok too, like the young Deathlok.
Yeah, but it's basically the idea is here is that Balder's been in hell for a while. He's been away a long time. Maybe you don't know some things have changed.
Right.
And they send him to the shine box, and they say, oh, get these people. We're going to protect the baby. And he thinks, I'll get this person, this person, this person. And they're all the old – he's thinking of the old versions of the characters, and it turns out that these are all the new versions of the characters.
Although he should have been picturing old Hawkeye in the full-on costume. He's picturing at the point in that page where he's picturing the characters.
Yeah.
He pictures Deathlok and he pictures, oh, there's also Doctor Strange or the Sorcerer Supreme, who is, I guess, not Stephen Strange because he ends up with some other dude.
I've never heard of that character. I've been reading Doctor Strange for a good couple of years now.
Right. Anyway, he pictures Hawkeye, but he pictures Hawkeye and he pictures Deathlok and he pictures Wonder Man in his all of his, you know, mid early 90s glory.
Spider-Man.
I think he should be picturing costume talk. But anyway, that's not.
I agree with you.
It's a minor quibble.
Because he pictures the correct Wonder Man.
Right.
So I think that concept and a lot of this was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I did enjoy reading it. I thought the art was particularly quirky enough in places and then sort of effective enough in other places. However, there were things that were, I don't know who the McElroys are.
They are popular podcasters. They do a really popular Dungeons and Dragons podcast.
Okay, fine, fair enough. So there was fun stuff about it, but there were other things where I was like, they were clearly writing Peter Parker and not Miles Morales.
Yeah, I mean, the voices were off on a lot of the characters. I had a fun time reading it, but like,
yes,
the voices were off.
I take a step away.
Yeah, it didn't feel like these characters, and that's why I had a hard time identifying who they even were on the trip. It felt a little like one of my biggest problems with The Last Jedi, in which every scene had to have a joke. Every dramatic moment had to be punctured by a joke. I just wish they'd let it breathe without a joke on every page.
Actually, you know what? You're right. If you go through it, like every page, this is not a bad way to write a comic. You know, every page is sort of its own thing, but every page is a punchline at the end of it. They're not necessarily always jokes. Most are. But other than that sort of second to last page, which leads into the punchline that is the last page, which is Ares shows up. Yeah, every one of them is like that. You're right.
It was exhausting. I was like, okay. But yeah, it was fun. It was it's a wacky road trip in a Winnebago with they're fleeing. You know, they're being chased. You know, none of the characters get along. And you're right. If you told me this wasn't Miles Morales, I would believe you.
Yeah, I thought, did they draw the wrong costume? Because that sounds like it's Peter Parker. But there were good ideas. Deathlok it, which I don't understand Deathlok, so I don't understand Deathlok it, but whatever. That was from, I'm going to say Dennis Hopeless's Avengers Arena, maybe? Is it newer than that?
I don't know.
She has a bunch of LMDs
right,
who she has parties with, and I was like, that's brilliant. You know, Kate Bishop is, I begrudgingly enjoy her sometimes,
mm-hmm.
I think. I wish she just wasn't called Hawkeye.
Right.
I think. Elizabeth is exactly the same. You know, I've liked her in stuff. I haven't always liked the solo book she's been in just because.
What if we call her Hawkeye and he gets called the Hawk?
I haven't even talked about that, have I? A movie Hawkeye was bad enough, and then it's worse. And now it's going to be a show because we need more of Jeremy Renner's lack of charisma. There was a moment in the second Avengers movie where I was like, he's kind of interesting here. He's not Clint Barton, but he's kind of interesting. You know, like, oh, okay, he's married to the girl from that 70s show on a farm. And
no, it was the girl from
oh, no, it's Linda Cardellini.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, sorry. Why did I think it was Laura Prepon?
I don't know. Anyway, this was fine. Let's rate it. Ratings. War of the Realms, Journey to Mystery number one. Ratings out of 5.
3.5.
3.5 is fair. Are you going to stick with this miniseries?
Maybe. If it's another week like this, yeah, I'll read it. if it's a 25 booker, maybe not.
All right, so that's a Patreon pick, patreon.com/ifanboy. You can go and vote to add a book to the rundown. But if you give it the $5 or higher level, right here live on the show, we will give you your own superpower. It could be useful. It could be dumb. It could be awesome. You never know. It's a grab bag. Wear it with pride. So let's give our first power to David Monroe. Everything David Monroe owns is in mint condition.
I'm kind of like that.
Everything he owns, there's no wear and tear on his clothes, on his shoes, on his car. Everything he owns. I mean, some things, obviously you got to break in, but they break in a way that they keep their original
luster.
So everything, nothing.
So inside his car, does it smell like a new car?
Always.
Wow, that's delightful. What about like jeans?
That's what I mean. Like they break in and get softer and
right
and more comfortable, but it's not like they don't like fall apart.
Right. There's no unwanted threadbareness.
No fraying. Like the thing is, unfortunately for him, he's never going to get those good like break-in lines. You know.
What if he buys the ones that are, they come like that?
Well, then they stay like that.
Okay.
Everything is as purchased.
Let me ask you this. Does he need to replace guitar strings?
No.
So like wear and tear items, brake pads.
Nothing breaks. Nothing wears down.
Brita filters.
Right. As new.
I mean, there's an economic component to that, plus the resale value. Okay, here's a question.
Mm-hmm.
Say that he has some stuff, he doesn't want it anymore, puts it on eBay. Does it retain its newness after it has left his presence? Or does it
no,
wear normal?
It's like a field around him.
Uh-huh.
So he could sell his... It's not like it ages rapidly like, you know, the end of Indiana Jones, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, he has a car. He's had it for 20 years, but it's like brand new. He sells it to somebody. It's going to start having regular wear and tear with that new person.
Right. But it's not going to be...
It doesn't suddenly age 40 years when he hands the keys
okay.
over.
All right, yeah. Doesn't retroactively.
No.
Okay, that's good.
That's good. It'd be mean.
I mean, like he's either a boon or destruction of the collector market.
For sure. I mean, his comic collection is.
Yeah.
It's impressive.
Just need to hang on to these.
Yeah.
They'll be fine. Oliver Willis.
Mm-hmm.
He throws padlocks onto things. He throws his hand out, and all of a sudden, that thing is padlocked.
Everything's padlocked. Could he throw one around a person?
Yeah, or you know, like it could be that, and then whenever you need to make that padlock work. So if he like sort of shoots his hand at somebody, the chain wraps around as a padlock, or like the bracket gets nailed into the door, he padlocks everything.
And now is it a key lock or is it a combination lock?
I was thinking about this, and I didn't come up with an answer before you asked it to me.
So what does your heart tell you?
My heart tells me that it would make more sense that they were that they were combination locks because at least you could have then, you know, deal with it without being like, well, where are the keys?
Right.
But I think that it's kind of random. And sometimes there aren't keys for those things. They're not like super padlocks. You could break it with bolt cutters if you needed to.
Right.
So it's, you know, I'm not seeing a combination lock though because I tend to think those are chintzier. Okay. I don't know. Because they're the things on lockers.
Right.
Not like those good locks. clunk, and they make a satisfying sound. Padlocks.
Right.
Like if he was walking by your car and it's like a mutant power, like it emanates from him. And say for example, he walked by David Monroe's car, right, and he went like that, there would be like a little padlock that shut the door. But then when it came off, the car would be pristine.
Cool.
Padlocks everything.
Bobby Baker, what were those people called who were like medieval balladeers who would sing about the day's events? Were they balladeers?
When you said balladeer, you knocked it out of my – I was going to say troubadour. That's not correct. Minstrels?
Bobby Baker is a modern day one of those. And what, okay, he has a lute?
Or a lyre?
Any of the two.
Are you sure he's not just in the Decembrists?
What he does is he sings contemporaneous songs about what's happening right now. And it's the most beautifully constructed, funny, deep song about the events happening right now.
This is how history was recorded for a great deal of time. During the Crusades, much of the history was passed along to people by way of popular songs sung like this.
Right. And he does it while it's happening. So somehow he can take what the events happening right now, like Dark Helmet said, right now, and make the most interesting, beautiful songs about them as they're happening. It always rhymes, beautiful melody.
Mm-hmm.
He's a contemporaneous balladeer.
You're really what's really bothering me is that I can't remember the word.
Mm-hmm.
But when I Google it, the first two things that come up are both minstrel and troubadour. Bard. What about a bard?
Bard. He's a bard.
That's a poet, though, isn't it?
Sure.
Chanson. That would be the French.
That's what he does.
Mm-hmm. I like that. That's useful. Well, the fact is, the way we're going for this now is that Chris Waldron can identify anybody by just looking at their shoes.
By only seeing their shoes.
Yeah. Interesting. You know, so you would bring him into court, for example,
mm-hmm,
because they, you know, they, all they have left is there was a shoe at the crime scene. He could be like, oh, that's him. That's so-and-so.
So they don't have to be wearing it. He just looks at the shoes.
Yeah, he knows from the style, the wear on the shoe, all the telltale signs of shoe possession.
Okay, he looks at a shoe and knows whose shoe it is.
Yeah.
I see.
Or for example, if you had like 10 bathroom stalls lined up on them, he could tell you who was in every one.
Right. I see. So it works both ways. He can look at a shoe as it's being worn until he's wearing it, but he can also look at it in the past and know who wore it in the past.
He knows whose shoe that is.
He's a
shoe detective.
Shoe savant detective.
Yeah, he's a chouvant.
Chouvant. That's his name. His superhero name. The chouvant.
The chouvant.
There you go.
Come on, that could make it into Wonder Twins.
There's your superpowers. Patreon.com/iFanboy. Thanks to David, Oliver, Bobby, and Chris for being patrons. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can get them. I guess we have time for emails.
Sure. I'll read the first one then.
Okay.
Eric F. of Brooklyn, New York, which I believe is in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Says, I recently read Batman New Gotham Volume 1 and 2 for the first time. I was surprised at how good it was despite being seemingly forgotten or at least never mentioned in any lists of great Batman stories. What struck me was how much fun it was and how different it was from the last decade of digging into the psychology or iconicness of Batman, main title, or the family stories, detective. Thank you for the footnotes. Do you think we'll get stories of crime and cops in Gotham and Batman again? Were we just lucky to get Dini, Rucka, and Brubaker when we had them, and that kind of Batman Gotham isn't coming back?
So, just, you know, I looked it up because I didn't know. Batman New Gotham Volume 1 and 2 are collections of Rucka's detective run.
Okay.
With Sean Martin Burroughs' art, that run.
That might be my favorite modern Batman run.
Yeah, it's a great run. I mean, that era of Batman, when Rucka and Brubaker were doing Detective and Batman, and then Dini came along, it was a great post-Dixon, pre-Snyder era.
Yeah.
I mean, these questions are hard. Will we ever get something? Ever is a long time.
That, yes. You know. It will cycle around again. I don't know when, but it will.
We've clearly been on a Snyder-inspired run for a while of certain kind of Batman story.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually someone else will take over who wants to do something else, and I mean, Tom King is doing different kind of things in Snyder, but it's in a similar vein.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, eventually someone will come along and they'll want to do a different kind of Batman story, and they'll want to focus more on the crimes and the street level stuff. And because that's what Rucka and Brubaker were. They did Gotham Central too. That's what they were interested in.
Yeah. And for a while, Brubaker was on Batman.
Yeah. Brubaker was doing Batman and Rucka was doing Detective at the same time.
Yeah. Ugh.
It was a great time.
That directly followed a terrible time.
Yeah, that was Larry Hama, unfortunately. Yeah.
And then after it, there was some time between that and Snyder. Which
yeah, there was. Judd Winnick came on and did a really long run, which was good. And I mean, there's a lot of people that did. It was the early 2000s. And it was a good time for Batman books.
Yep.
They're just very different stories than what they're doing now, as Eric noted. And it'll come around again eventually.
What goes around can get identified by its shoes.
Well, this is a similar question. Brad D. from Canada, at a recent panel, Denny O'Neill talked about his issue with modern comics. He talked about back when he was on the Bat books, they would first come up with a story, and if they determined it would take 2,200 pages to write that story, then that's what they would do. Whereas today, the people creating a book first decide they want to write 2,200 pages, and then later try to find enough story to fill those pages. In other words, decompression. While he never mentioned any creator by name or book by name, I felt like he was talking about Tom King on Batman. Do you agree with Denny, specifically on Tom King on Batman? I've been thinking about this question since March 16th, 2019, at approximately 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Decompression didn't start with Tom King.
No.
Decompression could be popularly attributed to Warren Ellis, to Brian Bendis in the early 2000s. That was sort of the stylistic change.
15 years before Tom King.
Yeah, and also, like, I feel like Bendis did that because he wanted actually the time to tell the story and really spend time with the characters and put in a lot of word balloons and things like that. And actually, Ellis almost did the opposite. But it was either way, they're playing with time. I mean, in one way I can see what he's saying is right, but also comics have to change. Denny O'Neill's a master. He is a legend. He is he's wonderful, but comics aren't the same as they used to be, and there's a reason for it, and it's not necessarily just, you know, like lazy new writers or, you know, backward practices. It's just, you know,
the era is that's different. How it is. The era before Denny O'Neill was different than the era he did.
And I also think that, like, if you're talking about Tom King, like, I can totally see what you're talking about in some of his work. We were just talking about that with Batman.
Yep.
But I also think that that is the writer creator working within a system that exists. Like, he's doing what he's told. It's work for hire. It's, you know, and I would put this more on DC editorial, and then also the market forces of, you know, you got to put them out in 6-issue chunks or, you know, whatever. And we've talked about this. So they don't do 2-3-issue stories anymore.
Right. Well, they do sometimes. I mean, more than.
Right. But not nearly as often. Like, it used to be that arcs, 6-issue arc would be a really big deal in the past.
Yeah.
Like, that was very uncommon before this century.
It's better now because the only thing I can say that's positive about the double shipping is that a 6-issue arc was literally half of your year before. Mm-hmm. So if you didn't like a story in a particular book, you were stuck in that story for literally half of your year. Whereas now it gets done in a quarter. So it's, you know.
Sometimes I feel like they make it longer now because they have to.
I think some people put too much blank credit and blame on the creative team because ultimately, as you said, they're not in charge.
I think the double shipping really contributes to this effect way more than anything else. Like, they've got to fill up so much space. So you've got a writer who has to come up with twice as much story in the same given time. Mm-hmm. That's hard.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even about the amount of work, but it's the amount of creative input that you're at, you know, the ideas that you're asked to come out with. They have half the time to think of it as they used to.
And they have only 20 pages of an issue, I suppose, 22.
That too.
Feels like not a lot, but it's actually a big deal.
I mean, it's like, don't hate the player, hate the game.
Yeah. And the fact of the matter is, we don't know, you know, none of us are making the books at DC or Marvel, so we don't know what they're told or what the edicts are, we don't know if Tom King was said fill 6 issues. You know, we don't know.
We do know that there are edicts.
Yeah, because they're not in charge.
Right. Like I know and have, you know, talked to plenty of people, you know, like, well, they said we had to do this.
Right.
So what book just ended? Green Arrow.
Right.
Very good example of that. You know, you were given an assignment. They changed it. You know, do this. This is your goal. Accomplish that. You have this long to do it.
Right.
You know. that's this. You know, it's not always the same length of time or whatever.
The editors are the bosses of the books, and the creative team, they're the faces and the name and the talent, but they're not really in charge.
And the executives are the bosses of the editors.
Right.
And the executive vice presidents at corporate, you know, Warner are the bosses of the executives of the, you know what I mean? Like it goes back. And obviously we've seen a lot of changes at DC, and there's, you know, demands, there's fear. I'm just talking about DC, but the same thing exists in its own form over at Marvel. It's a juggling act, man.
And the casting directors and the costume designers decide how your characters look now.
And Denny O'Neil didn't have to deal with any of that.
Yeah.
I mean, to a certain extent, but not nearly at the level that they are.
No, not at all.
Right.
But also, you couldn't take his books and compare them to what Silver Age books were like, because they're just totally different. They're different eras. All right, contact at ifanboy.com so you can write us the email. Let's plug some shows. So last week, Paul Montgomery and I talked about Shazam. We reviewed it. It's right behind this show on the feed. Or is it? Or is it two shows behind? It's behind this show, somewhere back there.
Yes.
You can find it. We had a good time talking about the movie. We had a good time watching the movie. Shazam! Exclamation point.
Yes.
So we got a lot coming at you. We thought we'd have a Hellboy show for you before the show, but we won't.
Yeah, no, it will be right after, though. We'll put the Hellboy show out early in the week, I think. We will talk about Hellboy later in the week. It's a lot of shows in this April. Justice League versus the Fatal Five will be out later this week. Animation Brain Trust.
Four shows in the space of 8 days.
Right. And then next week, kind of a big Marvel movie you might have heard of, Avengers Endgame. We're going to go see that. We're going to talk about that. It's somewhere in there I have to fit a Talksplode before the end of the month. I'm not going to make you any promises, but I'm going to do my best.
Is your dog growling at the idea of Avengers Endgame?
He's snoring.
Oh.
That's what he sounds like when he breathes. I mean, you could attribute anger to it.
I thought it was like editorializing. He's like,
Well, he would be very upset if, for example, I were to turn to dust, because that would affect his food intake.
Only that reason.
I mean, if we're being honest, my kids are much the same way.
Head over to fanboy.com so you can find all these shows we just mentioned. This is a weird month of crazy shows.
Yes.
It won't be like this next month, thankfully.
Why you got to be like this, April?
After Avengers, it's like the next one is the X-Men movie nobody wants to see. So that'll be
She's
fun.
Not right call.
It's all bad. So find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out by liking facebook.com/ifanboy or follow us at ifanboy on Twitter or at ifanboycomics on Instagram. That's where we do the Best of the Week in Panels feature as well. So you can check that out on Instagram. Individually, we are at J.A. Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram and at C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram.
If you like this show, this one you're listening to right here, you know what? I'm going to just say in aggregate, if you like the program?
The slate.
In general? Yeah. If you enjoy the property that is this, the full length and breadth of content, then you should write a review, leave a star rating over on iTunes. And I say this genuinely, you should do this for other shows too. I always just you know, pick your favorite show, like that podcast that you listen to, you know, like every week. And have you written a review for that? Have you left a star rating for that? You should, you know, you could up it. You could be a patron. You could do all that stuff, but do that at least.
You know, as we said, sometimes the books aren't great. We're a little grouchy on the show. Doesn't mean we don't love comics. Just means we're grouchy that week.
Yeah. I don't even know if grouchy is the word. We're reaching. I know that much.
Snoring somebody's in the background and grouchiness.
Yeah, somebody's grouchy. Listen, I'm sorry. He's old and he has to be next to me all the time. if you're not yet, tell folks about it. Tell your friends about it. There's this show I listen to, and in the background, first of all, they don't have any good comics to talk about, and then there's a snorting bulldog in the background, which, listen, I have a degree in audio and video. It's not professional.
No, but what are you going to do?
I accept that, but we did learn not to eat cookies on mic. We learned it a long time ago, and we stuck with it, damn it.
They were good cookies.
They were. I can picture them right now. Do you know what we're talking about? Have you been around long enough to experience that? Was that our second or third
episode?
Third episode of the video show. and we entitled it Cookies. I don't remember why, but the idea was we would talk about comics and we would eat delicious cookies while we did it. And when we were immediately met in our very early days with a hail of complaints that eating cookies on mic is disgusting. And they were right.
Why anyone stuck around after that?
They were so right. It's I hate that. I should have known better. And the fact that anybody did stick around after that means that you're amazing.
We were wearing shorts and eating cookies with a microphone attached. I don't know what the fuck we were thinking. We had 3 degrees in television production, and 2 of us had worked in television professionally, and still we did those things. Who the fuck knows?
We did learn from our mistake, though.
True.
And not about the shorts. The shorts went on for longer than they should have. people out there think, well, what's wrong with wearing shorts? I'm just saying, if you look at a 15-year-old image of yourself wearing your knees on a couch, you're going to go, oh, I wish I hadn't done that.
Listen, nothing wrong with shorts. You just don't wear them on camera, especially if you're sitting.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's all. Sometimes we didn't wear shoes. It was a fucking nightmare. All right. There's your show. Till next week, I'm Connor.
I'm Dave Mattingly.
Who was the guy in New York? New York One guy?
New York One. Pat Kiernan?
No, the guy we always used to imitate.
Oh, Wesley Dodds?
Wesley Dodds.
Wait.
Wesley Dodds, New York One.
I was about to say Dodson. Is it Wesley Dodd? I'm getting mixed up with the comic book person or Dodson.
Wesley Dodson.
I think it's Wesley Dodds.
Dodson.
But I don't hear him saying his name. I'm Wesley Dodds. It doesn't work.
No, that's not it. We fucked it up.
Yes.
Who was that guy? Wesley Dodson? Nope.
It's Dodds. It's D-O-D-D-S. I'm almost sure of it.
D-O-D-D-S. Nope. That's Wesley Dodds is the Sandman.
That's why. Okay, hold on.
Wesley.
New York One. Wesley. Oh my God, is he?
New York One anchors.
Lewis Dodley. Everyone, it was Lewis Dodley.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works 2 different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.